There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. We will look at the business of Valentine's Day and the results of the UAE's so-called earnings season. But first, Airbus has announced that Emirates has reduced its A380 orders. What does that mean for the future of the A380 program?
We're going to get some more insight on this now from aviation experts. He's the editor of airlineratings.com in Australia, Jeff Thomas, regular commentator on the Business Breakfast, joins us now on the line. We're a little bit sad in the Business Breakfast studio at the passing of the A380. What was your reaction when you saw this news?
Look, very sad also. I mean, it's a very great favourite with passengers, and I love many of the features of the aeroplane. But the reality is there's only one airline in the world that's really made this aeroplane work, and that's Emirates. And now technology is really catching up with the A380. And if I can put this into a simple term, the Boeing 787-9 or the A350, which Emirates has just ordered from Airbus, those two airplanes burn about 34% less fuel per passenger than the A380 does. And that's where technology has passed the A380 by. And the new 777X that's coming to Emirates next year, that will burn about 40 to 45% less fuel per passenger than an A380.
Sorry, yep. I was going to say that begs the question then. Why didn't somebody come up with a neo engine for the A380?
Well, that's a very good question and spot on the mark. The Airbus did come up with a neo solution for the A380, but unfortunately, not enough airlines were interested. The other dynamic here is that that passengers want to go point to point. They want to fly from their airport to where they want to go. They don't want to go through hubs. Airports are becoming, Dubai is an exception, but airports are becoming more and more stressful for passengers. There's only two or three really good airports in the world that are very enjoyable places to be in. A lot of them are not, and passengers simply want to go nonstop. So planes like the 787 and the A350, super efficient twin-engine airplanes, that can fly further than A380, burn loads less fuel, and they take passengers, they're smaller planes, and they take passengers to exactly where they want to go. So that's the problem.
Jeff, in terms of the number of passengers they can take, because they're stretching these planes now, aren't they, both Airbus and Boeing, the 777s and the A350s, how do the number of passengers that the biggest 777s, for example, can carry stack up against an A380?
Well, if you have an all-economy configuration for an A380, I think it's about 800 passengers, and an all-economy configuration for a 777 in a Japanese scenario is something like about 560, 570. So, look, the A380 will carry more passengers. There's no doubt about that. But per fuel burnt per passenger, these other ones are far more efficient. The other thing here is that airports are building more runways. Now, one of the things about the A380, they said a lot of airports will be capacity constrained. Well, these airports have said, well, we're going to build more runways. You've got Heathrow building another runway. You've got Haneda in Japan, they built another runway. So you've got airports around the world building more runways. So that huge capacity of the A380 is not as important as it was, say, 20, 25 years ago when it was launched.
Jeff, what does this mean for Emirates and the hardware that they've got it invested in A380s? Because I know that planes do change hands, but how many people or other airlines are going to want to buy A380s when the program itself is finishing? This leaves Emirates with quite a lot of metal on its hands. Are they going to have to sort of write down the value of these planes quite substantially?
Well, and I don't know the answer. You raise a fascinating point. The real problem here is for leasing companies who have purchased these aeroplanes and leased them, or banks that have purchased them and leased them to airlines. I don't know what the mix is for Emirates, how many they actually own and how many they lease. I mean, we know, for instance, that Air France has 10 A380s. they've announced that five of them are going back to the leasing companies in 2 years' time. Singapore Airlines has sent five back to leasing companies, and they're now being broken up. So for the leasing companies, this is a very bad situation. That there may be some pain there for leasing companies in particular.
Jeff Thomas, we'll have to leave it there. Fascinating insights, as always, from you, Jeff. Appreciate you joining us at very short notice. Jeff Thomas is the Managing Director and Editor-in-Chief of AirlineRatings.com in Australia.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. We're looking at the business of Valentine's Day with the CEO of Joys and Joys Gifts, Ritesh Telani, and asking if it's all about the money.
We're having a fantastic Valentine's Day. I mean, as a gifting business, we're doing really well. We experienced quite a big spike in sales on this particular day, more so than any other occasion during the year. Just to give you an example, so whatever we sell on a regular day, we see 20 times that number on a day like Valentine's Day, and it's more than any other. So Mother's Day would be a 5x spike, for example.
Just explain what exactly you sell and what is your general market on a normal day?
So we at JoyGifts, JoyGifts.com, we sell flowers, cakes, balloons, chocolates, and all sorts of other items. And on any given day, we'd be selling a lot of flowers. And that doesn't change on Valentine's Day. In fact, it goes up a slight bit. But we also sell a lot of chocolates and cakes on regular days. But on Valentine's Day, we see a lot of balloons being sold in addition to that as well.
So 10 times your normal business on an average day. What about other days such as Diwali, Christmas, Halloween, things, just other big events?
So in this part of the world, as you can imagine, Diwali and Christmas are big, but Eid is much bigger. And things like Mother's Day, those are quite universal. So again, we see a 5x spike on the Mother's Days for the UAE and Saudi. And now we have two other Mother's Day that are celebrated as well for the UK and the US. We see a little bit less on those particular days. Father's Day is, moderately higher, but, we know from our business that fathers just don't get as many gifts as mothers do.
I think one of the problems with Mother's and Father's Day is, of course, they're different in different parts of the world. But how much is this a sort of effectively a hallmark creation that they're bigging up the events to sort of create an all-round opportunity to part us from our hard-earned money?
That might be how it started. But if you think about it, gifting occasions like Valentine's Day and Mother's Day aren't exactly a bad thing. I mean, it gives us an opportunity to appreciate our loved ones and show them how much we care about them.
And you just mentioned there on Father's Day, you don't quite see the same spike. I have to say, my dad is a big fan of receiving flowers. And this morning I brought the guys in some chocolate because in Japan, women give chocolate to men on Valentine's Day. How often do you see women buying gifts from men? Or is it usually in your company you see men buying gifts for women?
So it's a very interesting question. If we look at our traffic, it's split quite evenly. So we have 50% male and 50% female customers. Having said that, 35% of the recipients are male and 65% are female.
So women are buying for women and men are buying for women, essentially.
It seems so.
My poor dad, he must be the only man in the world I know that gets flowers sent to him. He loves them. He really, really enjoys them. And to me, it's not a male-female thing, flowers. So I know also you're offering convenience. Joy, as you mentioned, if I want to surprise Malcolm and Richard with a cake, I can go on your website. I don't have to deal with a store, find out what they have. I can go direct to you. How are you finding that works out for you in terms of fresh produce, not just gifts like flowers or teddies or balloons?
So the majority of our products are perishables, so flowers and cakes and chocolates and things like that. What's different about Joy is that we work with a vast variety of different brands from around the region and brands across multiple categories. So Magnolia Bakery cakes, for example, or Godiva chocolates and Armani Dolce chocolates. So our customers, the feedback that we get from them consistently is the fact that we offer all these brands is fantastic. They don't get that in most other places or anywhere else for that matter. And the fact that we deliver within 4 hours for free at the same price as in the store, that's something that they value as well.
I'm guessing that you've got a lot of guys buying online who couldn't be bothered to hoist themselves off their posteriors and actually get up and do the hard yards and go to a shopping mall. This is last minute thinking, isn't it, the online stuff?
We do see that a lot of our customers are last-minute shoppers. In fact, most of our orders come in for either same-day or next-day delivery.
And what are the most... Sorry, go on.
Are you outing yourself here, Malcolm?
I'm afraid Valentine's Day means nothing, and it's something that I always remember, like about a day or two too late. You know, it's I'm not good. What are the most common purchases, Ritesh?
So we see about 70% of our orders consist of flowers, and on Valentine's Day, that doesn't change much.
Presumably it's roses, is it? But largely that sort of thing?
That's true. So a lot of the flowers shift towards roses, while it might be a mix of others during regular days of the year. And if you think about it, I mean, across the world, that is the case as well. 1.1 billion red roses are sold during Valentine's Day specifically.
And how many of that 1.1 billion do you sell? What sort of volumes can you give us a flavor of?
Well, if we're selling 1.1 billion globally, us as a small e-commerce player.
But, I'm just trying to get a flavor of how many sort of bunches of flowers you might sell over Valentine's Day.
We're talking thousands.
Thousands of them.
Can I just ask? So, yes, we've talked about perishables being quite a big slice of your pie, so to speak. But you do some pretty out there experiences or gifts as well, don't you? So if I wanted to think outside the box, I could send these two a gift of maybe someone singing or jumping out of a cake or a box. Is that possible?
It's funny you should mention that. So two of the things we do today already, and we'll be adding many more, but we do offer singing telegrams. So our agents of joy, we call them, they are trained to come and sing for you. So they'll sing everything from Happy Birthday to Nat King Cole's L-O-V-E for Valentine's Day or anniversaries. And
that
all
might
sorts
be
of
quite others. A nice touch, to be honest with you.
Yeah. We also
Richard,
have a campaign.
Yeah.
We have a campaign for Valentine's Day that we just launched actually last week, which seems to have gone viral, where we asked ourselves, what is the perfect gift you could give a loved one? And aside from all the material items that you could think of, if you really think about it, it's yourself, right? They're in it with you. And so we called it the gift of you, and we essentially ship you in a box to the doorstep of your loved one.
That is fantastic. Let me ask you very quickly, we've got literally about 20 seconds. What's the average spend?
So the average spend on a regular day is 250 dirhams. And on Valentine's Day specifically, it goes up. Now, we have numbers that are hot off the press since we're on Valentine's Day as we speak. And that number seems to have gone up this year to 330 dirhams.
So that is the average spend on Valentine's Day for you guys. Listen, thank you so much for joining us, Ritesh Tilani, co-CEO Joy and Joy Gifts. We've appreciated your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. Last day of the earnings season when listed companies report their annual profits or losses. Greg Feuer is the CFO of the Abu Dhabi developer Aldar. Profit last year dipping 5%. So what does that mean in 2019 for real estate in the capital?
We reported the full year financial results yesterday. We reported a busier year. Very happy to be reporting increase in revenue 2% to 6.3 billion dirhams. Our gross profit has been flat at 2.6 billion dirhams. I think importantly, embedded in that is a 3% rise in the net operating income that we make from our recurring revenue portfolio, which is by far our largest asset, the Aldar investments that we launched last year. It has 20 billion dirhams of real estate across Abu Dhabi, very diversified portfolio, generated 1.6 billion dirhams of net operating income, which is really underpinning our dividend.
Well, let's look at some of these different issues here, because as you said, there's a lot going on with Aldar. First of all, the revenue, which was little change, 6.3 billion dirhams, up 2% on the previous year. How have you been generating that revenue in terms of the recurring income you talked about, basically rental income, but also selling property, selling apartments, selling villas?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the big story we saw last year is we deployed a lot of capital, so we're growing through acquisition. So we acquired a significant number of assets from TDIC. So about 1.6 billion dirham worth of recurring revenue assets, hotels, some apartments, some district cooling assets. So that's driving growth in revenue. And we also acquired a large and significant development business from them on Saadiyat Island. So we've added Saadiyat to Aldar's destination portfolio. So we've got important projects like Mamsha at Saadiyat and Jawahar at Saadiyat that are mid-production, midstream, and are immediately adding to revenues and profits.
Let's look at some of the other things, including these fair value adjustments on some bits of the real estate portfolio, reportedly 700 million dirhams. What can you tell me about that?
Well, so at Aldar, we fair value. So this 20 billion dirham asset portfolio in Aldar Investments that I described earlier, we fair value those assets. So every year we hire, you know, independent appraisers come in and run the slide rule over and value them. And, you know, anytime you see some headwinds in the market, you can expect to see some modest modest adjustments to your asset base. So we took those 600 million against an overall asset base of 20 billion. We think reflects a pretty robust and high quality portfolio in this market.
And Greg, if we look towards the future, I guess you're doing something quite different at Aldar. You've unveiled this project, Al Reman, and you're selling villa plots. You're aiming squarely at the mid market here. Do you think that's an area of growth for Aldar?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's no question that we believe we've tapped into a rich vein of business there. And as I said on this program about a month ago, you know, we launched that that project. We sold it out, you know, same day with long queues down our sales center, and it's really the story with our market here. I mean, like the supply situation in the Abu Dhabi real estate market is there's supply coming in, but it's much more constructive. We're seeing supply coming in around, let's say, less than 3% of the overall housing stock, which means there are pockets of demand. And we've seen that in this middle income space. So, you know, as the dominant developer here, we have plenty of land to target these kind of pockets of latent demand. And we see more of that coming in 2019.
Very quickly, Greg, tell me about your tie-up with MR Properties, which you announced in 2018, and which I know is going to really ramp up in 2019. Just remind us what that is and what can we expect in 2019?
Well, we're very close to concluding the formalities with the joint venture. I mean, Saadiyat that I mentioned earlier is a very important destination, and we're going to be joining hands with MR to develop a very important Grove project there next to the Louvre, and also in Beachfront. So the JV represents for Aldar, our entry into the Dubai market, and MR has a very exciting project there that we're looking to conclude our joint venture with. And again, as you said, it would be really contributing to the development profits and growth going forward.
Greg, always nice to talk to you. Appreciate your time today. Greg Fewer is the Chief Financial Officer at Aldar Properties. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Richard.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai I 103.8.
Hi there, you're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. Adel Ali is the Chief Executive Officer of the low-cost carrier Air Arabia, and may I say, a friend of the Business Breakfast. He joins us now to discuss their surprise loss of 307 million dirhams for last year.
Let's begin with the underlying business. Quarterly profit, 26 million dirhams. Revenue for the year up by 10%. Let's talk about the underlying performance of the airline.
It's been continuously good, no different than the other years, except we've managed to get a good cross the 4 billion in revenue, passenger up 10, seat factor consistent 81% on what was supposed to be a soft year. So I think fundamentally everything has been excellent and good. Very happy with the performance.
You're reaching maturity now. It's well over a decade since Air Arabia launched. And any business, when it reaches maturity, it's more difficult to grow. Much easier in the early days. How are you growing the business now? You've got these three hubs already. You're well established in Sharjah, now running out of Ras Al Khaimah. Where is there left to grow for Air Arabia?
Well, 2018, the growth came, quite a sizable growth from our hubs in Morocco. We've added 26 routes in totality, and mainly it was about six of them from Sharjah. But the rest of it were from Morocco and Egypt. Egypt is a new market. We've actually slowed down in Egypt during the years back, but now it's the economy is booming, the tourism coming back into Egypt. So that market for us is also doing extremely well.
And looking at the figures, it looks like you're charging good fees, because the increase in passenger numbers was just 5%, yet the increase in revenue was 10%. Is that because you managed to increase your fares, or is it because people are simply flying on longer journeys and the fare is higher?
A combination of it, but I think the yield has taken an improvement in 2018, and that purely when you get to an 80% and plus seat factor, you can afford charging a little bit. But the other bit that people are spending more money is on ancillary revenues, on food and drinks and insurance buying and rent a car and all that, which adds to our bottom line as well.
Let's talk about the challenge that you've had this year, and it's related to Abrage Group. I'm reading from your statement yesterday, and it says, following the board of directors' proposed impairment in relation to the group's financial exposure in private equity firm Abrage, the carrier will report an accumulated loss of 307 million dirhams, subject to ratification by shareholders and so on. In simple terms, explain the situation here. What's happened and how do we resolve this?
Well, I think, you know, the Abrage issue, obviously, as you described it reasonably well, one of the largest private equity fund in the Middle East and North Africa and the extended globally. Us and quite a number of investors, international and local investor, are involved. We had to take a pragmatic, brave and a logical decision in one way to ensure that our investment is protected through the legal system, and we'll continue doing that. But on the other hand, we need to focus on the business and move the business forward. So we decided to take a one-off loss 1 year and move on to life as normal as we move into 2019. And that this is obviously will be presented to the shareholder as and when we meet in March. And if it's approved, then I think the Abrage issue is a provision that will remain in the books as and when we get the money back, it will be adding to the bottom line profit. But for the year and years ahead, the company does not have to accrue anything or look into those numbers every quarter that we close it as a publicly listed company. So I think we had a number of options. All of them were difficult. And the board of director felt that the best one is to put the problem behind you from a day-to-day management and move it into the legal hands to manage it. And by doing that, all what it means is as this year, 2019 closes, and if the business stays as is, which has been a good start to the year, we expect to be Air Arabia back to its normal and back to its dividend distribution.
Has this issue, though, changed the sort of company's investment psychology overall? Are you going to be doing different things with your money?
Well, I think, you know, one has to learn by hindsight a few things. But the return on investment at the time was very good. We are generally conservative in where we put our money and how we put it. Of course, whatever money is needed, and the main objective of keeping the money is for the need of the business and the expansion of the operation. And I think this particular time, it's probably private equity in future will be much more careful in putting it in. But we hope that we will be diversifying our expenditure and expansion of our business. And I think the year and the next year, we probably will need quite a sizable amount of money to expand on the new aeroplanes that we're getting into the field.
So let's look at what happens next. Big plans for 2019. In terms of where you take Air Arabia for the next 15 years, and you've been at the helm for all of those 15 years. If we look at long-term strategy, will Air Arabia change? Will it have to change and adapt, or fundamentally is the model going to stay the same?
I think the model will be always dictated by the customer's needs. What we're seeing is the low-cost business model is expanding and it's getting bigger. And we're also witnessing that quite a number of conventional airlines around the world turning into an LCC model. We've seen significant of changes in Europe. And I think, therefore, as long as we get an 80-plus seat factor and we're able to expand the business, I live in a philosophy of don't fix it if it's not broken. And it's doing well for us. So the future for us is to make sure that we look at opportunities into new hubs, to expand that business. We're getting, of course, an aeroplane in March, the first of A321, new long haul. That will allow us to go further afield in different parts of the world.
We've seen actually Fly Dubai doing exactly that, going further afield. Where are your ambitions?
Well, I think we've not covered Southeast Asia. We've got some rights to get into China that we have not been able to fly to. Certain parts of Europe, but Africa, we think is another opportunity for us. So the list is long, but we'll be announcing those as we move on.
Adil Ali, we'll have to leave it there. Great talking to you. Really appreciate your time this morning. Adil Ali is the Chief Executive Officer of Air Arabia.
Thank you.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Thanks for listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. We're back on Sunday, 6 a.m. live. Join us then. Have a really good weekend.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.